Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. The moral of today's show is this. Stop blaming the government's bad actions, or the government's failure to act, on the president's character flaws. Things happen because the elite want them to happen, or don't happen because the elite don't want them to happen. Not because the president is stupid or naive or competing with his father. We'll hear from both me and Michael Parenti. I hope you'll stay tuned. It was a holiday a few years back, and I was having dinner with a certain group of people, and the people were, I don't want to say pontificating, the people were analyzing and explaining why the president's domestic and foreign policies were as they were. All the evil the W. Bush administration and the Congress did from 2001 onwards was done not from malign intent, the consensus was. All the evil that was done is the result of character flaws in the chief executive. As though W. Bush really wanted world peace, working class prosperity, democracy in Iraq, and lower gasoline prices. He wanted all these good things, presumably, but was unable to bring them about because of his character flaws, or on occasion his stupidity. Why did we kill more than 1 million Iraqis and abolish half the manufacturing jobs in America? Because Bush is a non-drinking alcoholic. Because at heart he's still a spoiled frat boy. Because Dad and Mom always preferred Jeb to W. Because of some Oedipal-related competition with his father. Dad drove Saddam out of Kuwait. All right then, I'll conquer Iraq. That'll show Dad who's built larger where it counts. This psychologizing is lots of fun as a party game. As political analysis, it's dangerous. It blinds us to the class warfare that the rich have declared on everyone else. It misleads us into thinking that the psychopaths who have clawed their way to the top of the pyramid care deeply about our welfare. It deceives us into thinking that we can change the system by tossing out one politician and voting in another. The results of the 2008 election should have disabused us of that notion by now. George W. Bush did not invade and occupy Iraq because he was stupid, or he was too naive to question faulty CIA intelligence, or to outdo Dad. George W. Bush invaded and occupied Iraq to drive up the price of oil, to punish Saddam Hussein for exceeding his oil quota and thus lowering the price of oil, to send a warning to the other oil sheikhs in the region, to make Iraq a more obedient client state, to gain a site to put massive new military bases in the Middle East, and to keep the profits of U.S. war industries flowing. Bush, his family, his comrades, and much of his class all profit financially from high oil prices and endless war abroad. Injured soldiers and veterans are not being ignored, abused, and shafted by military and VA health centers because of incompetence or because of poor management skills. They are being ignored, abused, and shafted because low-ranking soldiers are expendable. Because the money it would take to treat and heal these soldiers and veterans will generate more profit by spending it on more bunker busters and SM-3 missiles instead. It's not incompetence, it's not absent-mindedness, it's not stupidity, it's deliberately chosen policy. After several minutes, we'll hear Michael Parenti elaborate on these same points. But here are two corollaries. First, when elite media institutions invite you to see government policies as proceeding from character flaws, they are engaging in psyops, disinformation, and deliberately attempting to lead you off the track. Secondly, the elite's playbook never changes because the plays work, and Americans know very little history, and Americans have pretty short memories in any case. So on June 6, I find a column in the Sunday New York Times in which Frank Rich, that's their most liberal columnist, Frank Rich explains that the massive oil spill in the Gulf, and Obama's prior lies about the safety of oil rigs, and Obama's prior advocacy of more offshore drilling, and Obama's reluctance to do anything that would inconvenience BP, and the massive Wall Street bailout, and the failure to do anything to regulate big finance afterwards, all this and more, Frank Rich assures us, is the result of, you guessed it, Obama's character flaws. The problem is not that the government has routinely let big oil get away with murder for at least a century. That's policy. No, the problem is that Obama is too trusting in his advisors. The problem is that Obama is too trusting of industry big shots. The problem is that Obama is too deferential to the ruling elite, too impressed by experts, too reluctant to admit that even experts can be wrong on occasion, too reluctant to drop that unflappable, unperturbable persona and start shouting and scolding and swinging that Teddy Roosevelt big stick that's probably still in a corner somewhere in the Oval Office. If the Oval Office has corners. Rich's propaganda hodgepodge is too long to read whole, but I'll pass on a few juicy sentences. And I quote, speaking of Obama, unlike his unflappable temperament, his lingering failings should and could be corrected. And they must be if his presidency is to credibly seize the narrative that Americans have craved ever since he was elected. We still want to believe that Obama is on our side, willing to fight the bad corporate actors who cut corners and gambled recklessly while regulators slept, Congress raked in contributions, and we got stuck with the wreckage and the bills. But his leadership style keeps sowing confusion about his loyalties, puncturing holes in the powerful tale he could tell. Your eyes should be rolling about this point, dear listener. Returning to Frank Rich. His most conspicuous flaw is his unshakable confidence in the collective management brilliance of the best and the brightest he selected for his White House team, his abiding faith in the judgment of experts. Obama has yet to find a sensible middle course between blind faith in his own Ivy League kind and his predecessor's go-with-the-gut bravado. By now, he should have learned that the best and the brightest can get it wrong, and do. White House geniuses persuaded the president to make his fateful claim in early April that, quote, oil rigs today generally don't cause spills, unquote. A particularly specious, indeed false, plank in the argument for his spectacularly ill-timed expansion of offshore drilling. See, the problem with offshore drilling is that Obama didn't get the timing right. Obama's excessive trust in his own heady team is all too often matched by his inherent deference to the smartest guys in the boardroom in the private sector. His default assumption seems to be that his peers are always as well-intentioned as he is. The single biggest mistake he has made in managing the Gulf disaster was his failure to challenge BP's version of events from the start. This is baffling, and then some, given BP's atrocious record prior to this catastrophe. No high-powered White House meetings or risk analyses were needed to discern how treacherous it was to trust BP this time. An intern could have figured it out. But the credulous attitude towards BP is no anomaly for this administration. Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs was praised by the president as a savvy businessman 2 months before the Securities and Exchange Commission sued Goldman. It's this misplaced trust in elites both outside the White House and within it that seems to prevent Obama from realizing the moment that history has handed to him. Rather than embrace a unifying vision that could ignite his presidency, Obama shies away from connecting the dots as forcefully and relentlessly as the facts and Americans' anger demand. This all adds up to a Teddy Roosevelt pivot point for Obama. But Obama can't embrace his inner TR as long as he's too enthralled to the supposed wisdom of the nation's meritocracy, too willing to settle for incremental pragmatism as a goal, and too inhibited by the fine points of Washington policy debates to embrace bold words and bold actions. So the reason Obama let Wall Street get away with murder and trillions of dollars of our tax money is not that he's a tool and a puppet and a handmaiden to Wall Street. The reason is, gosh, he just relies too much on the advice of experts. He's too trusting. The reason he's letting BP get away with murder is not that he's a tool and a puppet and a handmaiden of big oil. No, it's the reason is he's just too trusting, too reluctant to shout, too reluctant to embrace the vision that Americans want him to embrace. Let's have a short, thematically relevant musical break, and then we'll come back with Michael Peretti and his own thoughts and feelings on the same subject.
I'll send this out, well, to my little community station in Nevada City, California, KVMR, and to all of you brave, what we call now micro-broadcasters, who are working hard to take back the people's airwaves. All right. I switched on the radio, turned the dial, thought I'd listen to some news for a while. I grabbed the knob and spun it around, got NPR, here's what I found. Real news, hardly a trace, just one damn marathon marketplace. Dow's up, NASDAQ's in the cellar, and NPR sold out to Rockefeller. Hostile takeover, real hostile. Well, I hear all about the antitrust and all the day traders who bit the dust. Mergers, buyouts, and acquisitions, roll down crooks in high positions. Wheelers, dealers, and CEOs fired and paid off through the nose. Buying yachts and fancy homes like they did with the money from the savings and loans. And I get off, that is. Well, dot-com this and dot-com that, and the underwriters are getting fat on airwaves stole from you and me by a bunch of sheep, bunch of thieves called the FCC. They don't give a damn what we want or need. They've all caved into corporate greed and sold us out to the ruling class. Well, a whole damn bunch can dot my com. The family show, folks. FCC says, watch your language. English, what's yours? Well, I got tired of being treated like a veg, so I called up the station and canceled my pledge. And in a mighty act of liberation, sent the money off to my community station. I said, I love you, but if you blow it, I'll sure as hell let you know it. I'll knock the radio off the shelf, buy a transmitter, and do it myself. Whitebeard the Pirate. This is radio station HOBO, broadcasting on a vagrancy of 60 to 90 days, signing off for now.
Utah Phillips and NPR Talking Blues. The opinions expressed in that song are Utah Phillips's and do not necessarily represent those of this station, which does not necessarily make the opinions wrong either. And as Jiminy Cricket said, let your conscience be your guide. Here's a much-edited and condensed version of a talk Michael Parenti gave in San Francisco in 2007. When he speaks to the president, he refers to George W. Bush. Since the playbook doesn't change, his analysis applies just as well to Barack H. Obama. I broadcast a bit of this talk, on the drowning of New Orleans, on a show about psychopaths a few months back. Most of Parenti's words are new to the show, though, and I think the minute or two on New Orleans is worth hearing twice. Parenti's main point is about the same as mine. Things happen because they were made to happen, or allowed to happen, not because the president tried to do the opposite, but failed because of his character flaws. In fact, Parenti argues that the W. Bush presidency was not a failure. In fact, it was an enormous success. Not a success at doing what you wanted, maybe, but a success at doing what David Rockefeller wanted. Here's Michael Parenti.
I want to argue that stupidity and confusion are not king. When we repeatedly see the furious actions of our national leaders as being driven by stupidity, we then are left with a very limited critique of what their policies could possibly be. We can critique it without ever addressing the class war that they are waging. Their policies suddenly become the product of their personal shortcomings. Bush Jr., he's had a couple of things. There was the mistaken CIA intelligence that was given to him that was all messed up, you know, about Iraq, and he didn't know anything about it. And if you believe that, I've got some choice oceanfront property in Nebraska that I wanna like to sell you. Two more dramatic examples of a nefarious agenda masquerading as incompetence. Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, and 9/11. Now, on Katrina, It wasn't mismanagement. I wrote an article on that, how the free market killed New Orleans. It's in the book because I whipped that thing out, and it really got circulation on the web, and it got translated in a couple of languages, and people seemed to really appreciate it. So I put it in the book. There wasn't mismanagement in New Orleans. To this day, that's all we hear. He mismanaged it. He dropped the ball. FEMA, what a mess. FEMA performed brilliantly. FEMA stopped every bit of aid from going into New Orleans. They consistently made decisions that were consistent and ruthless. Medical aid, rescue teams, food pouring in from all over the United States were held off while the medical personnel in the Astrodome were begging for help and assistance. They weren't given any. More concern was given to crowd control and looters. There was more patrols going around ready to shoot people than to rescue them, and people were dying in their flooded attics. Scores of people died because things weren't being done. They broke New Orleans. They broke that heavy Democratic community, which, by the way, used to swing the state of Louisiana into the Democratic column every so often. There's even a quote, which I have, something I'm writing now, from one of the right-wing local politicians. We wanted God to clean all these people out of the housing projects and all, and we couldn't do it, but God did. And it was proof that government doesn't work. That was the other thing. I remember getting any number of blogs from people telling me how New Orleans shows that government doesn't work. Let me read to you from that article, How the Free Market Killed New Orleans. There's a whole analysis on how that happens in terms of flood levels and hurricanes and global warming. New Orleans was not destroyed by Katrina, you understand. It was destroyed by flood when the levees broke, and everybody knew that was going to happen and had reported it and all that. All right, this is what I say very briefly. To be sure, government does not work, certainly not when it is in the hands of reactionaries who have no desire to see it work. New Orleans was victimized by those right-wing ideologues who opposed the idea that government can be a salutary force in regard to social needs and human services. The White House reactionaries would be quite content to demonstrate that government is not to be counted on when it comes to helping communities, especially low-income and ethnic minority communities that are Democratic strongholds. So that's what happened. That's my explanation of New Orleans. Now, there's another bad habit of thinking that I want to alert you to, and that is this idea of seeing leaders as being not innocently trapped in their incompetence, but trapped by their own psychological makeup, some say. And there's a whole literature, political psychology. I have a critique, if you're especially interested in that. In my book, History as Mystery, I have a chapter on psychopolitics, a critique of that whole idea. Psychologizing about leadership behavior is another way of denying or avoiding political economic interests, seeing what those interests are that are at play. Presuming to be able to explain the policy behavior by reducing the motives to a matter of personality. So we hear things like Bush is a dry drunk. Somebody told me that recently. He's a dry drunk. That's what makes him so dangerous. Oh. He suffers rejection from his father. George Sr. and Barbara always preferred Jeb to him. That's true. We know that. He wants to outdo his father. His father took only Kuwait and went a little way in and wouldn't go to Baghdad. He went all the way to Baghdad and bettered his father. Yeah. The truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, that there have been, over the last 200 years, there have been all sorts of men who have occupied the White House with all sorts of different personalities, coming from all sorts of different families, having all sorts of different fathers and mothers and childhood experiences, being born at all sorts of different rank and position among the siblings. I mean, some of them are firstborn, some of them have three older sisters, some have this, that, the other, all those things. And yet all of them, just about all of them, have pursued policies that were consistent with the needs and goals of finance capital. Certainly Polk, McKinley, Teddy Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, well, just more recently, Bush, Clinton, Reagan, etc. And you can go back and through them. Mexican War, Spanish-American War, blah, blah, blah. And all of them have pursued policies that have been consistently expansionist, aggressive, violent, and successful. Now, that success, let's look at that success question. Because once it's decided that the decision makers are stupid, ill-informed, incompetent, or if you're doing the psychology stuff, neurotic, and have blind spots and they can't fathom certain things because they're not as smart as you, it follows that their policies are failures. We hear that today, for instance. We hear that this administration is a failure. Bush is described as a failed administration. It took a wrong turn. I don't think it's a failed administration. He eliminated the estate tax, giving literally hundreds of billions of dollars back to that top fraction of 1%, the super rich. He's cut back corporate taxes down to almost nothing. Billions of dollars in Medicare have been handed over to Big Pharma, this pharmaceutical killing. Billions in income tax cuts, 40% of it has gone to the top 1% of the population, 40% of the tax cuts. The military budget has doubled. Where's the failure? Record profits for the defense industry and heavy industry in general. Where's the failure? Record corporate profits in general for all corporations. Federal courts are packed with young reactionaries like Alioto and Roberts in the Supreme Court and all through the other courts. Under the Bush administration, human services have been cut back or held flat. Wages remain flat, or real wages, counting for inflation, have actually declined. Two presidential elections were stolen. You got to see the article on that in here. This is an infomercial we're doing here. The super rich are richer than ever. Civil liberties are being rolled back and really held hostage. When George Bush came into office in 2001, oil was about $25 a barrel. Today it's $100 a barrel. Is that a failure or a success? It depends on which side of the barrel you're standing, you see. It's not a failed policy for the oil companies. Even in the area of foreign policy, as I say, there have been some setbacks, of course, but much success. The U.S. military has established a presence in the Middle East and Central Asia with large and permanent and very impressive military bases in any number of Central Asian places. The Kosovo KLA terrorists will likely get an independent state, and they will continue the free market privatization and the ethnic cleansing of Serbs, Jews, Gorani, and Roma. Iraq has been a good to 100 corporations who have made billions, I mean billions, profit levels records. One-third of the money that the Pentagon has, of the billions in the Iraqi budget, the Pentagon itself says at least one-third of it simply cannot be accounted for. That money's going someplace in some part. Money doesn't disappear. Money never disappears. It always goes to somebody. It doesn't evaporate. Water evaporates, but money doesn't. Free trade is destroying local markets and production and extending corporate control over every corner of the earth's remaining resources. The rights of property and profit have been elevated above all other rights with free trade agreements and above national sovereignty and democratic sovereignty itself. The NATO alliances have extended across all of Eastern Europe. International law has been repeatedly rebuffed. The ICC has been rebuffed, the International Criminal Court. So where's the failure? They've made mistakes. They've suffered setbacks. The idea that mission accomplished, we were going to go into Iraq, it would be a quick, easy victory. That was certainly a policy that backfired. Nobody is saying they're infallible. Nobody is saying they're omnipotent. But what we are saying is they know what they're doing. They are pressing and pursuing their interests at great cost to our interests. fascism, let me tell you what Adolf Hitler did when he came to power. He did the same thing that Benito Mussolini did when he came to power in Italy 11 years earlier. He cut taxes for the rich. He increased corporate subsidies and corporate profits. He destroyed labor unions. He increased armament spending. He pursued wars of aggression. He privatized the public sector. Now, does any of that sound... It could happen in different ways, in different political cultures, but you're operating for the same thing, which is to keep the hegemonic power of that society intact.
Thanks for listening, and many thanks to Mariah Gilardin and TUC Radio for the Parenti recording. www.tucradio.org. Not to mention newworldnotes.blogspot.com. New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Here we get to my non-carborundum. Don't take any wooden nickels. Let's go out on a bit of David Rovics and ciao.
Were you drinking wine from Argentina or Indonesian coffee? Did you take some in a plane and go fly across the country? Did you go to work the next week, drive your daily 20 miles? Stop at Sears to see the latest Chinese styles. When you did these things, did you wonder how or why? In the years before the oil wells ran dry. Were you watching the news? Did you wonder when they'd bomb another country or start up the draft again? As you tried to stop the war that might decide the planet's fate, did you stop to question how that food got on your plate? As you stuck your fork into that slice of pie in the years before the oil wells ran dry? When you went back to college to get another PhD, or you went into the studio to record one more CD, did it occur to you that your time might be spent better digging in the earth or learning to knit a sweater? Did you prepare for all the changes, or at least pretend to try, in the years before the oil wells ran dry? When the cars and planes stopped running, and the dollar hit the floor, and the hordes of hungry children were knocking on your door, when unemployment in the streets said blame the Arabs for our plight, did you shout with dirt held high, farmers of the world unite? Did you ride an ox into town, say join the Green Revolution or die, in the years before the oil wells ran dry?